We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Actually, a lot of different things were discussed so far in the first couple hours of this Bernstein and McKnight edition. We started with a little baseball, trying to figure out if there is something to be done with Tyler Chatwood and what that could possibly be. Trying to figure out, you know, by the numbers, what the Cubs are doing here and how so far they're one of the worst teams ever, one of the worst pitching staffs ever at walk rate. Yet their defense has been so good at turning balls into outs, and the BABIP has been so low because of that reason that they are able to sustain it. It's their defensive efficiency that is allowing them to win all these games, even while allowing these free passes. Mike Florio talked football, and we also discussed the report that the Bulls would lean toward matching even a max offer to Zach LaVine. I think we're in agreement that that's probably at least too rich for my blood if I'm running the Bulls. I would think about other ways you might want to keep him in the fold than that.
We also, not insignificantly, talked about Bond villains, their weapons, and their henchmen, and their place in modern society. Speaking of, I don't know if this comes to light, if this story happens without social media, without the way we all kind of live our lives out loud, I guess, or at least to a certain degree. This is from the Ottawa Sun. And the Ottawa Senators were terrible this last season, 28-43-11. And apparently the whole season was just mired in just complete ugliness. This is Don Brennan Moore. Just when it looked like the Senators' season from hell was mercifully over, things took an unbelievable turn for the worse, a million times worse. And don't look now, because the end is nowhere in sight. Weeks after Captain Erik Karlsson had a face-to-face parking lot confrontation with teammate Mike Hoffman over a belief that Hoffman's fiance, Monica Carrick, was guilty of unthinkable harassment of his wife, the matter wasn't settled.
Unthinkable harassment?
Melinda Karlsson filed an application for an order of protection, alleging Carrick has threatened her and posted over 1,000 negative and derogatory statements from November 17th and up to and through the stillbirth of Carlson's son on March 19th.
What?
The accusations go far beyond disturbing. Carrick allegedly wished the child and mother to die and that someone take out Carlson's leg to end his career. Hoffman emphatically denies Carrick's involvement. We've been aware of this situation for months, says Mike Lewitt, the managing director of the hockey division at Octagon Agency, which represents Hoffman. This happened at the end of the year. We've been very clear with the club. I've talked to the Players Association about it. We've been very upfront about Mike's support of Monica and denial of what's going on. He told that to Erik face-to-face at the end of the season. That's apparently the parking lot confrontation.
What?
There's more to the story. It's a premature whoosh. There's all over the place. It's who's telling the truth. It's these comments on Instagram, and apparently it gets uglier and
what started
uglier.
It?
I don't. It doesn't really say. It's just insanity. If Melinda is wrong with her suspicions of proof, and the sicko continues to harass her, does that not limit the number of... It goes into the idea of how this affects the team going forward and trades in the NHL. I mean, it's just an insane thing going on. You've got a teammate's wife wishing for the death and destruction of another teammate's wife and teammate out on social media and through Instagram. It's insanity.
I don't know the baseball writer Robert Murray of FanRag Sports, but I know it's the same employer of the highly reputable John Heyman, who is a frequent contributor on these airwaves, so I give it credence in that regard. And here's what Murray writes. Last week, I was asked whether Washington Nationals superstar Bryce Harper was overrated. I gave my answer. Then I received three text messages from a top National League executive with his answer. And he has these texts verbatim. Text one, he's simply overrated. The good ain't worth the bad. He's a losing player, cares about himself more than the team. If I was in charge and had money, my team would not pursue him. We would use that money to sign 2 to 3 winning players. Text two, He's a losing player. I would not sign him. I would use the money to sign 2 to 3 winning players.
Wow.
Okay. Why would somebody send a second text that's almost identical to the first if it's the same person? That's what I don't get.
Rambling? Could be just the rambling.
Text 3. If he gets more than 10 years, $300 million, I'd be surprised. I would not give him 10 years, period, and certainly not at that AAV, average annual value. He's just not worth it. He's a selfish, losing player.
Don't his results kind of speak for themselves? I mean, is this just old guy being mad about the hair flips and the helmet tossing and the general cool that Bryce Harper kind of gives off?
It's also an individual sport that masquerades as a team sport.
It absolutely is.
You can be a little selfish as long as you make a play on the ball when it's hit to you and you throw it where it's supposed to be thrown and you hit it when you get your chance.
If, by the way, you're knocking the Nationals for having a me-first guy on a team that's trying to win, here's how the Nationals have finished in each year since 2012, Harper's rookie year. First, second, first, and second. Yeah, there's been flameouts in the playoffs, but I think a lot of that we've seen has been because of pitching and not necessarily an offense that's gone completely silent. Reggie Bush got himself paid yet again. The Los Angeles Rams have been ordered to pay the former NFL running back $12.5 million. Do you remember what this is from? This is when Reggie went off the field in St. Louis on a run, ran into the concrete circle of death, which apparently that's what it's been deemed in the lawsuit.
I was going to say, they shouldn't have called it that when they put it there, because you're probably inviting a lawsuit if you're referring to it as the concrete circle of death.
Outside the park here, we'll put the moat. We'll have the moat with the piranha and the alligator, and inside the concrete ring of death. No one's getting to the field. So Bush goes on to the concrete ring of death. The cleats slip out. He ruins his knee. He has won his lawsuit, $12.5 million. And if you follow Reggie on Twitter at all, he's been very pleased with the results. And he should be. I mean, it's $12.5 million for a guy who ripped up his knee and did not find a whole lot of success afterward.
And there will be appeal after appeal after appeal. And it could be years before he sees a dollar of that money.
Stamp Kronk has anything to do with it? Yes.
A raccoon that appeared to be stranded on a ledge after climbing more than 20 stories of a high-rise office building in downtown St. Paul, Minnesota, has made it to the roof. And in the latest update, has been successfully trapped in a live trap and will be fed and then released back into the wild. So this was being followed yesterday because it became a social media thing. This raccoon, or as Connor says, raccoon.
Raccoon, yeah.
Like recline.
That's right.
It's raccoon.
No, it's fungible. You get to pronounce that one any way you want.
No, you sound like a bag.
It's not raccoon.
Thanks.
Raccoon.
Raccoon.
No.
I know what I'm saying.
But you're saying it wrong.
Will like Wheaton. A bag.
Will Wheaton.
No. Cool Whip.
Say Will. Will. Say Wheaton. Wheaton. Will Wheaton.
No, it's raccoon.
Well, however you pronounce it.
I did not know that they could scale buildings like spiders. Did you?
Spiders.
You actually see the video of this? It's walking straight up a building. And there's always stories about raccoons saying, well, you know, they have opposable thumbs. You know, they're smoking cigarettes.
They're mean as hell.
There's always something about how dangerous and how smart and all that. There's a great video of like a bunch of little, I don't know if it's dogs or cats that are eating, and a raccoon that goes over to the feeder.
Just takes it all.
Takes it and runs away on two legs while holding the food. Like runs away like a human. It's hysterical.
We had him up in the garage in Fort Wayne. He had to throw smoke bombs up there to get him out of the roof. We had, you know, these old houses and detached garages where essentially apartments were above the garage.
Yeah, like
themselves.
A loft thing, yeah.
Yeah, giant things. We threw smoke bombs up there to get him to come out. And then it was, all right, kids, run away, because the raccoons, that's how they pronounce it there in Fort Wayne, they come at you with like hands made of knives and razor blades.
Wait, they were coming at you?
Oh, yeah, they'll come at you. Well, because they had nested up there. The mother was up there protecting the baby raccoons. And you got to worry about it.
Well, this one, they think that this raccoon was going after pigeon nests, trying to find some easy meals. And then
what's easy about that?
Ended up on a ledge and then decided, instead of coming down, to keep climbing upward. And I didn't know that they could just grab onto the side of a building and move up like Batman and Robin. So that's now you know.
We know that more football is coming to Wrigley Field, what with Northwestern hosting Wisconsin, November 7th, 2020. Get your tickets now. But apparently, and I suppose we saw this coming,
But where is it? Ballpark Digest has it out that a college football bowl game could be heading to Wrigley Field, something that might be a regular occurrence at the park. When we went to the ballpark, what was it, 2 weeks ago? Last week, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that, and I hadn't noticed it before, but those, and Crane Kenny talked about it too with us, that a lot of the bleachers, the seats rather, behind the dugout are all removable. There's some essentially just like metal bleachers that you can pop out of there so that you can play, whether it's concerts or whether it's football, going, you know, both ends. You don't have to do the one-way game that we saw a couple of years ago at Wrigley. So there could be essentially more football coming to Wrigley Field.
I don't know if we have time for this now, but I think I'm going to tease this going into break because it's a full 2 minutes of our buddy Mike Francesa on WFAN talking about something that it's as if he doesn't know it already exists. I want you to imagine somebody monologuing about the idea of the refrigerator or the idea of sliced bread or something, not knowing that this brilliant idea actually already has come into existence.
So you have this big metal box and it keeps things cold, right?
You plug it in, it uses electricity.
So
you could put things in there like turkey or like roast beef or maybe cheese.
You do that the way it is now where you have the ice man who shows up with a big block of ice and he puts that in there. Instead of doing that, my idea was you get some sort of compressor and electric-powered compressor that is the same thing, but instead of the guy coming up with the tongs and the block of ice, it actually keeps cool on its own because you plug it in, your butter, your margarine, your Fleischmann's, your cold cuts, whatever, it actually works out of electricity. So this is, I want you to imagine something like that, thinking that he's got some sort of new idea.
Sounds like a good idea.
If you have,
let's market it to Sears. See if they want to sell these things.
If you have not heard this, you're not going to believe it. Because I had to listen to it again to think, wait a second, nobody's in his ear on this, and I guess not.
Just let him go. He's on a roll.
Exactly. That's what it felt like. So you're going to hear that next on The Score. Almost. To all the texters who thought they heard something during that sports minute, we got you because you did. We'll bring back Dr. Feinstein, Dr. Howard Feinstein.
Exactly.
We will.
Doctor.
Yeah.
Doctor.
Is he a doctor of sex?
Indeed.
Yes. That is definitely coming back. So no worries there. So Mike Francesa, when opining on WFAN about legalized sports wagering, has come up with a revolutionary concept.
Well, this is good because we're in a brand new world now, Dan. Sports betting is legal now, and we weren't here before. We need the bright minds thinking of the future.
I want you to think about this new, fresh idea that he has, what he might be describing if you could sort of boil this down to just a couple words. Here is a couple minutes on this concept that he has.
If the states are smart, they will take people who really understand this, okay, and let them create games that would attract people. And there are games. If I created a game for you that plays into your football or basketball or baseball expertise, and you could, for a $20 or $50 in total, have a chance to win big money based on how you play it, that will be an exciting play for you, okay? That will be a very exciting play for the average guy. And I think you can create something where the payoffs are not a dollar in a dream like the lottery, where the odds are you got a better chance of getting hit by lightning, but that if you have a skill, there will be a game. I could create 10 games in 15 minutes if they gave me 15 minutes to do it. And those games, if created properly, will be very enticing to the public. And what's good about them is the bookmakers don't have the same games. They don't have the mechanism. They don't like coupled bets. They don't like the chance of you winning a lot with a little. They frown on that. They don't want that. They want you to bet dollar for dollar. They really want you to pay 11 for 10 is what they want you to do. So they want that bet. They don't want this other bet. And this other bet is where the states, if they're imaginative, will make their money. I can create a game in 15 minutes for you. Like, let's say I create a game where you get to pick five players tonight in the major leagues. All right? And if your five players, based on numeric totals, have better offensive numbers for the night than any other five players, you win $50,000. And the fee is $10 to get in. People will buy that. They'll play it like crazy. They will play it all night. And you can create different ones. You can create ones that pay $10,000, that pay $5,000. But if you give the average guy a chance to win $5,000 for his $10, it's going to do it.
What two words would sum up this Mike Francesa gambling concept?
Daily fantasy.
Daily fantasy.
What in the hell?
I know, right?
What in the hell?
And why 15 minutes?
No,
why is the arbitrary time period to recreate daily fantasy sports 15 minutes?
That's the least amount of time Francesa spends doing anything that matters to him. That's it. Well, if I've spent 15 minutes on it, now it matters. Okay. This is now the buy. I really like that his games, though, you would pick five players. And if they outperform everyone else's five based on numeric totals, you win. Mm-hmm. As opposed to picking five who might outperform other players by, I don't know, like height and weight or just average speed of reaching for just like these rent. Well, of course, it'd be based on stats.
If you
the hell are you talking about?
And he said a specific skill that people would love it. People would jump on this idea.
People will buy that.
Of having a specific skill to anticipate certain athletes' performances on a given night.
In fact, you know, this could get so big that if it was implemented in states that didn't have gambling, you know, you could see this going to the Supreme Court because of the interest in it.
They'll play it like crazy.
You could see some of this end up, you know, with maybe a New York district attorney coming after the fact that these guys are making money on this and the states aren't.
And the question of is it luck, is it skill? How is that established?
Maybe that's going to be a big contention, yeah.
Maybe, for example, two massive competing companies that decide to flood sports television with a competing ad blitz to get people initially to download their app and be a part of what they do. If you really are foreseeing what could happen.
You know, though, it's not all utopic. I mean, we got to remember the algorithms, Dan. I mean, they could factor in here. I mean, if you had a bunch of guys focused on, you know, in the dividend industry, you know, some Wall Street guys who put together algorithms, there might be an unfair competitive advantage in this particular realm. Still, we can work around that. That's fine. There's a lot of money out there.
People would buy it. People will come, Ray.
People have bought it.
People will buy that.
It's done. It's sold.
They'll play it like crazy.
How can somebody in our business, having lived through the DraftKings FanDuel, that particular flood,
in that state,
because no one's allowed to tell him he's wrong. They just have to sit
there.
He's
not wrong. He's just 4 years too late.
No one can correct him. No one can do anything. It's just let him be. Let him do what he does, and don't get in the way.
How appropriate is it that they finally had him set up his own Twitter account and he follows nobody?
Makes all the sense.
Right. What is out there for him that's going to help him?
You could follow the actual Pope at Pontifex.
At Pontifex.
That's the one guy, right?
Too many porn gifts. Oh, no, that's not what I'm thinking of. I think that might be a different
Pope.
One.
That's
Pope.
Pontifex.
We see you.
Yeah. Pontifex, right? Yeah. Come on now. Come on, Pope. Sorry.
See all the likes.
Hacked. I was hacked. We are brought to you in part by the Chicago Wolves on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, and the Wolves are making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now and receive exclusive benefits. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES. We are going to be talking with former Blackhawk Nick Boynton in just a little bit, and the reason is he wrote a long piece today for the Players Tribune about his harrowing journey as a hockey player, not just after hockey, but what was happening to him as he was playing and how many of these stories have we read now? How many of, whether it was locally Steve Montador and Dan Carcillo, or some of the names that he mentioned in his piece of Derek Bogard and Wade Baylock and is it Rick Rippon, and this understanding of what was being asked of certain lesser skilled players, what was being demanded of them, what the sport asked them to do, what the code of machismo asked them to do, and the descent into pain and drugs and mental illness and suicidal thoughts and trying to emerge from it, and what he feels he has to do now, what his responsibility is to bring new meaning to his life that sort of ran out of meaning.
Yeah, I mean, you asked how many stories like this have we read. I think the question for Nick, or one of them that we'll ask in a couple of minutes here, is how many more are there to be told? You know, I mean, you mentioned the names of those that have not survived their post-NHL careers, and there have to be a good number of players, former players or current players, dealing with the same thing. I mean, that's kind of his point, or a point in this, in his piece on the Players Tribune, that there are a lot going through this, and someone needs to step up and take some sort of accountability or help shepherd these guys through the effects of a style of play that he quite frankly admits to buying into. Though it was very difficult to do to begin with, getting himself up for fights, knowing that he had to be that tough guy. We heard a lot of guys. John Scott has talked about this too, about how much you hate it. They hate the anxiety, the apprehension, the lead up to going into a game knowing that you're going to have to square off against somebody tonight.
He said he didn't sleep the night before games and he would just be paralyzed with fear. He also admits to actively trying to injure opposing players because that's how he thought he could help his team win above and beyond just actually playing hockey.
And then the lifestyle that he felt he had to live to keep playing hockey is one that I think probably is more widespread in that league than a lot of people would like to admit. Whether it be players, former players, front office people, or even commissioner type level stuff, there's probably a lifestyle there that might be a lot more widespread, and maybe Nick can talk to that, than we care to admit.
You heard Daniel Carcillo on these airwaves pouring his heart out about it, about what he wishes he had known about head trauma and what was actively withheld from him as he was being asked to do certain things and contribute in certain ways, that the league knew things that they were not disclosing regarding what he was doing to himself. And it gets back to this, when a player offers that he would give it all back. And I believe that Nick Boynton says, you can scratch my name off
that
cup. He said, you can take my name off the cup. I would return the ring. He said his opportunity to know now, to know then what he knows now, would change the way he approached everything. And you wonder of current players if this provides any cover, any freedom against an adversarial league, a league where the commissioner will not give any ground in even admitting that there is connection between brain trauma and chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Yeah, I mean, I think, too, that whether it's Boynton or whether it's Carcillo or whether it's other players who haven't made it to writing a Players Tribune piece like this, or a tell-all, not tell-all, it's kind of a tawdry term, so more of like a confession, I guess, of what it took to get through that league, there's always going to be those who push back and say, well, they chose to play the game that way. Or you have to know that taking shots to the head are going to injure you to a certain degree. That's true. Find some humanity.
And the omerta of don't talk about it and don't show your feelings about it. And don't,
this is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, don't ever back down. This is what you got into. This is what we do. And you have to tough through everything no matter what, despite the fact that there's no such thing as a tough brain.
Yeah, there's got to be a level of humanity reached in a discussion like this because, you know, like you said, when Boynton starts listing the things that he'd give back to have some of those years back, to have some of that experience back, I mean, I don't know any other way to approach it than trying to understand where he's coming from.
We're
trying to understand that the pain that was.
We're going to talk to him about that in just a moment. The segment brought to you by Hotels.com. With Hotels.com, get rewarded from seaside cabins to resorts. For every 10 nights you stay, you get one free. Hotels.com, you do you. Get rewarded. Free nights don't include taxes and fees. Nick Boynton joins us next on The Score. the famous Phantom Championship.
It went in.
Patrick Kane saw it go in. He started celebrating, and one of the guys on the ice as that was happening was our guest now on the Bernstein and McKnight show. He is Nick Boynton. You can follow him on Twitter at NickBoynton24. And the piece that he posted in the Players Tribune, I will warn you ahead of time, is harrowing. It is not an easy read. So, you know, for us to take the time to actually read it is different than actually having lived it and be living it, as Nick Boynton is. Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me.
Wow. I guess what motivated you to finally feel that sharing this the way you did was something you had to do?
To be completely honest, it was more about, I guess, helping my family, maybe my kids understand what was going on, sort of in case, you know, something did happen. I wanted to get it on paper. I didn't want, you know, there to be questions. I kind of want, you know, my wife, my family has lived and sort of dealt with this. And, I don't want to come out and say I'm blaming anybody. I played the game. I played it hard. But there's some real problems going on that aren't being addressed. And I just wanted to make sure get it down on paper and have those problems, out there. So,
Nick, you kind of go through in this piece what it took for you to keep on playing, whether that was things that were legal or illegal at different times in your NHL career. You've mentioned that you need, that the league needs to help guys out better. What would you like to see them, or where would you like to see them help players in terms of their place in their career? Is this a post-playing thing? Is this a while they're playing the NHL?
It's a during. It's an overall culture change I think we need in the game of hockey. I completed three drug rehabs and, you know, alcohol rehab programs, and it just didn't even touch on some of the issues I was having with my head. And I applaud Alcoholics Anonymous and I applaud the league for having these treatment programs, but my head is still injured and it's not treating the problem, which is my brain injuries. And I was still dealing with the same things and just sort of, you know, in this circle that I couldn't get away from it. And it's just it's the whole culture of the league. They got to start treating these brain injuries when they happen. They have to be treated better. The spotter thing is a joke in the NHL. And guys, you know, you've got to be accountable for what you do out there. But for me, the NHL and the Players Union doesn't even acknowledge that there's really a problem with head trauma in the game, or that, you know, that could factor into post-playing days. So I think the first thing is to get the league to acknowledge and get on board and just start helping. I'm not trying to point fingers, but I need help, and I know a lot of guys need help, and we're not getting it from where we should be getting it, and that's our former employers and our unions not standing up for us.
There's some of the names that you mentioned that we know, the stories of Wade Baylock and Rick Rippon and Derek Bogard and closer to home, Steve Montador, and of course, Daniel Carcillo, who has been on these Score airwaves talking at length about his issues. And sometimes the hard-ass hockey response is like, well, who wants to hear from these guys who they weren't even hockey players anyway? You admit to trying to injure people and understanding what your role was as one of the sandpaper guys. Carcillo's like, yeah, I was out there being an instigator. So there are some who say, well, why should I feel sorry for you? Why should I care about you when you were admit to doing what you were doing in the way that you did it? How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me, first and foremost. I know what I did, and that's that. You know, I will say I played in an NHL All-Star game. I was drafted in the first round twice. I was a good hockey player. Just good wasn't enough. In order for me to stay in the league, I had to do things, and I was fully aware of what I was doing. It was a paycheck. It's entertainment. I believe in entertaining. I believe there's a time and a place for a fight here and there, but the treatment's got to change. You know, take a couple pills and and sleep it off just doesn't work. It's, you know, I'm 8-9 years later and still having these problems that came about from, you know, the way I played the game. Why can't we just get on the, why does it have to be a fight? Get on the same page, treat the problems, find new treatments, better treatments, and help the guys during their playing career, treat it better during, so afterwards there isn't, you know, there isn't these issues.
You mentioned that teams are willing to give a pill here or there, or painkillers as it was, and maybe you can kind of delineate how accessible that was. But at some point, you write in this piece that you told a team that you were having a problem, and later on you were traded. I can't imagine that felt good at the time, and I can't imagine that helps you deal with the issue. If whether it's you or another player, I can't imagine that helps you deal with the issue you're having.
No, it doesn't, and it really... You know, looking back and thinking about it now, it affected me in a horrible way. I'd opened myself up. I was having problems. It was obvious I was having problems. And the next response after opening myself up was, you know, being passed off and to another team. And it's just 99% of the people I've met in hockey and that worked in hockey are good people. There's a few bad people, but the culture in hockey is to stay quiet, not talk about your problems. You're not tough if you talk about it. I at some point, I don't even care about the game. You know, these problems are, I live in Arizona. We've got 16-year-old high school football players walk off the field and die from head injuries. So that to me is bigger than the NHL, but since, you know, we're going to go there. I don't want people to feel sorry, but it's just the culture has to change. There are times when I was a kid when I bumped my head. You know, we can all think we got our bell rung and not doing anything about it. We've got to treat it. Our brain is so complex, and it does everything for us. So I think it would be fair to say that we just need to invest in some new treatments and get some help from the league.
Well, I think, Nick, what you're also pointing out is the very reason why, you know, Gary Bettman won't even admit that there is a connection between heads hitting each other and hitting the boards in hockey and chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and maybe why the union isn't throwing its support behind this. It's an existential threat to the very sport itself, is it not? And I'm not doubting what you're saying is true,
absolutely.
But you're telling parents. I mean, I'm a hockey dad, and
yeah,
and I've seen, you know, 9-year-old kids suffer concussions. I see at the bantam level with kids just starting to hit right now, and knowing what's going on out there, and my son's a goaltender, but the goaltenders aren't immune from these things, from these, you know, now 75, 80 mile an hour slap shots coming from 6'2", 13, 14-year olds. So we think right about it, but there isn't the answer then get our kids out of hockey?
No, sports are great. I mean, we can, you know. Sports teach kids, you know, rules, fairness, winning, losing. I love sports, and I love the sport of hockey. But to have to listen to Gary Bettman and Brian Burke and these people who everybody looks up to. I looked up to the NHL players, and I wanted to play in the league my whole life. But to listen to them and Jeremy Jacobs in Boston, too, deny that there's a problem is just infuriating to me. And that's really, you know, I was in a tough spot. Dan Carcillo found, you know, he'd been through this treatment. He stayed on me. He got me out of my funk, got me this treatment. You know, I see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm angry again, because just watching the league and how they're handling it, get on the right side of it. The league can survive. Everybody, you know, can make money, be happy. But we've got to deal with this, because it's more than hockey. It's everything, you know, mental health issues, whether they come from me getting knocked on the head or, you know, just you're born genetically. That's the way it is. We need to find better treatments for it. Throwing pills, saying there's not a problem, or, you know, throwing pills at people and saying there's not a problem isn't the answer. It's, you got to be on the right side of this. I've lived it for the last, you know, 10 or 15 years on the wrong side of it, being quiet, not talking about it. And, you know, them lying about it has sort of forced me to do something about it. And this has helped me, and hopefully it helps some other people.
Well, you've written some, too, about the culture of just get out there and keep playing and what that kind of culture led you to do. I can't imagine. I'm sure you've talked about it with those you've sought help with. I just, drug use in and of itself cannot help a brain as it's trying to recover from injury like that. And like you said, I know you don't want anybody to feel sorry for you. You did what you did, and I find that kind of responsibility refreshing, to be honest with you. I have to imagine, though, that you're not the only one who's suffered brain injury like this in this league, in your time or this one, and gone through, gone to drugs to try and find some kind of solace. And I wonder how widespread you think that is.
I can only speak for myself, and obviously there's other guys. I think it's pretty widespread as far as when I was still playing in the league. And it's just such a difficult place. You know, you don't throw kids at your or drugs at your 10-year-old, 12-year-old son, daughter when they get bumped in the head. You know what I mean? But what I faced after hockey when I talk about these problems is, well, here, take more drugs. And eventually, like, well, can't we just find out what the problem is and try to treat the problem instead of doing this with drugs? I mean, one way or another, whether they're prescribed by a doctor, the drugs will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's stuff I have to take, but just more and more isn't the answer. I want to fix the problem.
You mentioned light at the end of the tunnel. And one of the things that you said in the conclusion of this long and wide ranging essay was that being able to speak about it is now giving you something constructive. It is giving you some sense of purpose. You have Daniel Carcillo with you. You have others. What's next? How much structure are you going to have? Obviously, doing things like talking to us and letting people know helps too. But how do you continue to build meaning and increase the light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, I hope, first of all, what Dan's done, he's sort of been on his own for a while, and he's just done an amazing job, and you know, he's helped me a lot. So it's just another guy getting his name out there, just bringing attention to it. I hope more people speak out, because I think people will be really shocked how many guys are actually struggling, you know, after hockey from similar stuff, you know, brain injuries. Like, it's just, there's got to be more done, you know. I mean, we'll get the best surgeons in the world to fix my shoulder, but, you know, I won't even see a doctor about my head. That's just not right. The whole culture has to shift.
Well, I'd like to hear somebody currently playing. I mean, I'm just throwing out names, but we know that Jonathan Toews has had a long concussion history. We know what Corey Crawford has dealt with. See, for me, you know, Sidney Crosby himself, we heard about Chris Pronger, and even, you know, going back to Eric Lindros. At some point, somebody in the game, a major star of the game, has to put his hand up in the air and saying, I am having these problems right now. You know, I think that's where it really hits home, is if it is somebody that we're still tuning in to watch, someone who is able to be able to walk into that locker room with his head held high and be honest about going through it. Because we know it's true. We know there have to be people currently suffering.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. It's a huge problem in the game. And like you said, the league and the union, obviously, you're staying away from it because it's such a big problem and poses such a great risk. But I hope, honestly, just coming out and telling this story makes it easier. You know, Dan paved the way, makes it a little bit easier for me. Hopefully, this makes it a little bit easier for a guy playing. I know there's guys struggling. It's such a difficult place to be, because you know you've only got so many years to make that kind of money. I grew up on a farm. You know, we didn't have much. And, you know, my reasoning was flawed, you know, when I was playing. And I think a lot of guys' reasoning is like that, and it's understandable. But it'll take somebody, a big name, to come out and keep this ball rolling, I think.
Well, we certainly wish you the best, and we wish your family the best, and appreciate you doing what you did. And I'm certain that it's going to end up doing some good.
Well, thank you so much, guys, and I really appreciate you having me on.
That is Nick Boynton, again, on Twitter, at NickBoynton24, the former Blackhawk and former NHLer. The segment brought to you by Fogo de Chão. Savor authentic Brazilian steakhouse flavors at Fogo de Chão, even on a busy schedule during weekday lunch. Visit their locations in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville for lunch, starting at $15.
I want to get back to some things we talked about with Nick there in a little bit during the noon hour. Now we get a little bit of a shorter show because the Cubs and Brewers are a day game. We'll take a quick break here, and Len Casper is going to join us next on Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.